not only have we pushed the refresh and restart button at healthcare.gov, but we've improved it. Now, I'm going to be quick to say it's not going to be perfect.
Healthcare.gov gets ready to relaunch with some glitches in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Tulaksac residents empty their freezers of spoiled meat after a long power outage.
Have to give it to the dogs, I guess, because I can't cook it and eat, because I know what will happen to me if I do that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Unaffiliated candidate Bill Walker has increased his lead in the governor's race. The Division of Elections tallied nearly 20,000 ballots this morning, with still more to be counted later this evening. An afternoon update by the division showed Walker with nearly a 2% lead over Republican incumbent Sean Parnell, about 4,500 votes. Meanwhile, the gap in the Senate race shrunk slightly. Democratic incumbent Mark Begich began the day 8,000 votes behind Republican challenger Dan Sullivan. Begich made up some ground midday when rural absentee votes were counted, but then lost it with the most recent update. Neither Parnell nor Begich have conceded their races, though the Associated Press called the Senate race in Sullivan's favor on Wednesday after concluding the difference between the candidates was insurmountable. Both candidates are outside the half-point margin required for an automatic recount. The Division of Elections will stop today's count in the early evening and then resume tallying the estimated 14,000 remaining ballots on Monday. Two different Pentagon agencies investigated the Alaska National Guard for allegedly mishandling sexual assault complaints. They came to opposite conclusions, and U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski wants to know why. The Alaska Republican sent a letter today to the Inspector General of the Defense Department asking for a review of the investigations of the Army Inspector General. The Army IG concluded the Alaska allegations couldn't be substantiated. A letter summing up those findings sent to Murkowski in May said the Alaska Guard's method of gauging morale and attitudes about leadership, called climate sensing sessions, did not reveal concerns about sexual assault and harassment reporting. The report itself was heavily redacted. Then in September, a report by another agency, the National Guard Bureau Office of Complex Investigations, was released. It reported significant distrust of leadership, favoritism, ethical misconduct, and injustice. Murkowski called it highly irregular that two professional investigations would come to such different conclusions. Calling for greater transparency, she asked for an unredacted version of the first report. She also asked the IG to ensure that the Guard whistleblowers don't face retaliation. November 15th marks the start of the second open enrollment period under the Affordable Care Act, when individuals can sign up for health insurance on healthcare.gov. But even before it opens for business, there are signs the website isn't working correctly for Alaskans. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Most Alaskans who buy individual insurance on healthcare.gov receive a subsidy to help pay for it. But right now, the website is underestimating subsidy amounts for Alaskans. Enroll Alaska noticed the problem as the company tested out the healthcare.gov site. Joshua Weinstein is president of North Rim Benefits Group, which oversees Enroll Alaska. He says the company won't sign up customers until they know it's working correctly.
I'm just concerned that if we enroll people with the wrong subsidy amount, how would that get rectified later? And so our strategy is to just hold off a little bit, basically communicate the plans, help people understand how it's supposed to work, gather most of the information, but just not quite hit submit yet until we know the subsidy calculations are fixed.
When healthcare.gov launched in October last year, the website wasn't functional. Over the last several months, the Obama administration has emphasized the new version of healthcare.gov will be much improved, but not perfect. Susan Johnson is the regional director of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. She addressed the subsidy glitch at a news conference in Anchorage.
I was on the phone call with DC this morning. They're working on that. It's high on their list. I'll be talking to them again this afternoon, and we'll hope to get that fixed as quickly as we can.
Johnson couldn't provide a timeline for when it will be fixed. But in the meantime, the United Way of Anchorage and the Alaska Primary Care Association are preparing to help Alaskans across the state sign up for health insurance. Both received Navigator grants from the federal government. Sue Brogan with United Way says the organization will hold a lot more public events this time around to get the word out.
What we learned last year is that Alaskans sought more of a human touch to find their way through the process. That individuals could make decisions, but what they really needed first was a better understanding of the ACA, the ins and outs of health insurance, and their coverage options.
For the first enrollment period, navigators who help people enroll were only based in Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. This time, navigators with the Alaska Primary Care Association will be in Barrow, Bethel, Girdwood, Fairbanks, Juneau, King Cove, Sitka, Skagway, Soldotna, St. Paul, Talkeetna, Unalaska, and Willow. The United Way also has three navigators in Anchorage. And if Enroll Alaska's experience holds, they will be busy. Joshua Weinstein says he's been impressed with the level of interest the company has seen.
At least for the first week, every available appointment is taken. We have five or six licensed agents that are working with just strictly on the individual market. And then some of our group agents and consultants are also stepping in to help fulfill the need. And we're just booked out.
The open enrollment period ends February 15th. You have to sign up by December 15th for coverage that starts January 1st. During the last open enrollment period, about 16,000 Alaskans signed up for Affordable Care Act insurance. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
After a week without power, a backup generator is scheduled to arrive in the southwest Alaska village of Tuliksak today. But families have already lost hundreds of pounds of moose, fish, birds, and berries. KYUK's Ben Matheson visited with residents in Tuliksak to hear their concerns.
Fred Napoka met the airplane Thursday morning to pick up a new generator. As a smaller unit buzzed in the background, Napoka and a few helpers got to work setting it up.
There should be oil quartz.
Napoka's new 4,000-watt gas generator came at just the right time.
With this warm weather, it won't take too long to have the freezers thaw out.
Families are taking shifts with generators and running cords to their neighbors in attempts to save food. It's not uncommon for people in the village more than 50 miles upriver from Bethel to have multiple freezers where they store subsistence food, making up the majority of their diet. The more than 400 residents have been without power for a week. The Tuliksak Traditional Power Company has been unable to repair their generator following a blown piston. The state is sending an emergency generator on a DC-6 that's large enough to power the entire community, but it's too late for some. Veronica Andrew lists her losses.
80 pounds of meat. 70 pounds of bird, about 100 pounds of fish.
Ray Nikolai's more than 150 pounds of moose was no good.
Have to give it to the dogs, I guess, because I can't cook it and eat it, because I know what will happen to me if I do that.
A long list of regional and statewide organizations are keeping close communication with Tuliksak. Community members filled out surveys Thursday listing how much food was inedible. The state wants to be ready to ask food charities for help if it becomes necessary. Local store manager Andrew Alexi still had food on the shelves, but said customers were out in force.
It's a hectic week.
Crews continued to work on the power plant Thursday and clear space for the temporary unit. The state says Tuliksak can use it as long as they need as they come up with a longer-term solution. Peter Andrew Sr., the president of the Traditional Council, which runs the utility through the tribe, says the generator has had a hard life.
It's very old and it's very outdated. I don't know how old is that generator, but the mechanic said here it was an outdated generator, and it's very hard to find parts for it.
People over the past week have been depending on wood stoves for heat and camp stoves for cooking. Marie Andrew was dealing with limited access to the washateria by bringing out the old washboard.
Since the lights are off, I'm washing clothes by hand.
When asked their plans for restocking freezers after the unplanned November thaw, many hope that state and federal managers could open up additional hunting for moose and caribou. Andrew had another simple solution.
Go ice fishing.
In an unseasonably warm November, many residents' calendars have been tossed aside. As freezers go warm, some even moved up Thanksgiving dinner a few weeks to save the turkey from going spoiled. In Tulixac, I'm Ben Matheson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Tlingit dance group passes on cultural tradition in Sitka.
I love it. I don't know. I'm just so passionate about it. It's just like one of my favorite things to do.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Students at the University of Alaska Anchorage are trying to motivate their classmates and the community to get informed about a controversial infrastructure project, the UMed District Northern Access Road. They say the public still has a chance to shape the project's future. KSKA's Ann Hillman learned more.
The planned but not yet permitted UMed District Road would cut through what is now woods and wetlands to connect Burgaw Street to Elmore, right between the UAA and APU campuses. The legislature set aside $20 million for the project in 2013. UAA Vice Chancellor for Administrative Services, Bill Spindle, says they're still negotiating what the university would get in exchange for the land to build the road.
You know, if we can do value, you know, instead of money. In other words, an extra roundabout, an extra crossover, then that's a benefit to us.
Spindle says the plans for the road and even the exact route are still not set in stone. That's the major point that students from the environmental planning and problem-solving class want to get across. The UMed District Road is not a done deal. Senior Jennifer Howell says the class is hosting an educational forum because they want students and community members to have the tools to participate in the upcoming Army Corps of Engineers public comment period.
Because it's a little bit more than saying, oh, I think that this is a good idea or a bad idea. The requirement is that there's substantive comments, and that's been a learning process for us as students in the classroom.
Howell explains the Corps is involved because the proposed project involves filling in wetlands. She says the class isn't taking a position on the topic, but they want people to be aware of the process.
But we don't really know what the Corps of Engineers is going to say, and that's why it's really cool that there is a public process still, and that it's really important for us as students in the UAA community to actually get involved in that, because we can actually make a difference. It's not a done deal, and we have a voice. If we don't use the voice, then there's not a whole lot we can do about it. But we do have a voice, and it's important to get involved.
Howell says most students don't know about the project, so the class is inviting speakers from the UAA administration, like Spindle, to talk about why the road is necessary and to answer questions.
Well, this road for us is all about safety.
Spindle says the road would reduce traffic problems on UAA Drive and move cars to the outskirts of campus. He says the roundabouts would slow traffic. The student-led meeting will take place at the UAA library on Tuesday at 5:30 p.m., The core public comment period will begin once the Department of Transportation submits the permit applications. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Dozens of people gathered at Farnsworth Park in Soldotna for a candlelight vigil last night. It's a joint effort of the Kenai Peninsula School District and community groups to raise awareness about homeless youth and families in the area. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver was there.
The sign that marks the entrance to Farnsworth Park reads, "Dedicated to the children of Soldotna." During the day, kids can often be seen playing on the equipment or in the grass. But the nighttime vigil held at the park was for kids who often go unseen.
They don't want to be known because they don't want to be known as one of those kids, you know, that doesn't have the family support, you know, is struggling.
Krista Schooley knows because she was one of them. She was born and raised in Soldotna. She's 40 years old now and a proud parent and grandmother. But she says a long time ago, her life was very different. A series of very bad events led to her becoming homeless.
A lot of just trauma in my life, you know. I was raped when I was 14, and it just made me go downhill. Ended up being a mom of two by the time I was 17. And from the age of 17 to 19, I was a couch surfer. I went from couch to couch.
As a homeless teenager, she struggled to find safe places to sleep at night, food, and most of all, support.
There wasn't really anything out in the community to really help me get on my feet.
Going about trying to find what resources are available, it's very difficult when you're on your own.
Kelly King coordinates the Students in Transition program for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Each year, her program identifies between 200 and 300 homeless students in the district. And that number is rising.
It's hard for me to imagine being 16 years old and trying to channel public assistance for food stamps and figure out how I'm getting to and from school.
Then there's finding shelter, running water, heat, and much more. Her program helps youth navigate the specifics of getting the help they need so they can stay in school. But the reason she and others have organized this vigil for the last 5 years is to shed some public light on this incredibly important issue that she says isn't talked about enough.
Well, I think in society in general, there's a really negative stigma attached to the word homeless.
She says she hopes events like this will motivate people to really think about the issue without stigmatizing it. And 17-year-old Soldotna High School student Lana Chesley is doing just that. She's seen how being in that position goes beyond the personal life. She's had homeless classmates and friends and says it takes its toll on school life and social life as well.
I knew it was really hard because most kids grow up with all sorts of electronics and gizmos and money and stuff. And the people who I knew did struggle because they couldn't connect with their friends like that. So I think it's a struggle for them as kind of an identity thing that they can't relate to their peers as anyone else did.
Kelly King hopes that making the unseen seen, even for just one night, could spark the change that is sorely needed. In Soldotna, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Today is the first annual Dr. Walter Sobolev Day in Alaska, and dozens of the late Tlingit leader's friends and relatives marked the occasion with a parade through downtown Juneau.
Hey-ya, hey-ya, hi-ya.
Sobolev would have been 106 years old today. He passed away in 2011 at the age of 102. His oldest son, Sasha, says humility and inclusiveness were his dad's lasting legacy. The Presbyterian minister accepted people of all races at his church in Juneau at a time when the town was segregated.
This man worked well over 100 years to do things for not only the people of Alaska, but for those who strove to better themselves, to do what they needed to do. And what was key to his heart and key to his spirit was the service to his God and Jesus Christ.
He was involved in the Alaska Native Civil Rights Movement of the 1940s and later in life helped launch efforts to revitalize Native languages as well as traditional art and spiritual practices.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Annie Feit. This week on AK, Tlingit Dance. Dancing can be a celebration, an expression of joy or sorrow, or a way to tell a story. For one man in Sitka, it's a way to teach people about his native culture and values and to carry on his tradition. With elders in the community growing older or already gone, he says it's his responsibility to learn and pass along the teachings to a younger generation so they can grow up proud to be Tlingit. Ann Bryce has the story.
Chuck Miller is teaching second and third graders how to perform traditional Haida-style men's and women's dances. Miller is the youth program coordinator at the Sitka Native Education Program. It's an after-school program where kids and teens learn Native dance, song, and language. Students are called Gajahin dancers. Miller attended the program when he was a kid and says dancing makes him feel connected to his culture.
When I dance, it feels like my ancestors are running through my veins. When you put your robe on, it's like you're putting on your teachers. You're putting on your ancestors. You feel them on you. You're embracing them. It's like you're walking into a warm hug.
Miller grew up in Sitka and became a Gajahin dancer when he was just 3 years old. As a child, he was surrounded by elders and mentors who taught him the traditional Tlingit ways of doing things. He says that when Alaska became a part of the United States, the Tlingit culture suffered.
That's just the way history happened to us. A lot of the people went through boarding schools and it wasn't okay to speak Tlingit language. They beat it out of you. Or the families back at home would say, we're stepping into the white man's world. You can't speak your Tlingit language anymore. We want to be more adapt to the culture that's prominent here.
So in 1974, Isabella Brady started the Sitka Native Education Program. She, along with other cultural leaders in the community, wanted to instill a sense of cultural pride in the younger generation so they would grow up to hold and pass on the Tlingit teachings.
You know, the vision of the elders was, you know, our culture is going to die. We need to do something now. We need to get these young people together.
Miller remembers the words of the elders.
One of them would always say, point at every one of us, and you folks are going to be the leaders one day. Yeah, it's true. It's coming around.
Heather Powell is the education director of the Sitka Native Education Program. She also attended the program growing up and says being a Gajahin dancer shouldn't be taken lightly.
For us, it's a very, very big responsibility to carry those songs, to dance those dances with respect, with knowledge, and with knowing where they come from, who do they belong to, giving those pieces of our history that tie us to those songs, to those places, to those names.
Both Miller and Powell have embraced the leadership role. Powell says that Tlingit songs and dance teach students about Native traditional values and how to live by them. Olena Valley is 15 years old and a Gajahin dancer.
I love it, and I'm just so passionate about it. And it's just, like, one of my favorite things to do. It's, like, one of the things that, like, makes me super happy.
Valley says it helps her forget her everyday worries and that the songs they sing are really personal.
Stuff that we say in songs is, like, more about telling stories and stuff like that. They're really deep. So it's kind of like a privilege for people to hear songs like that. It's like reading someone's journal or something like that. I don't know how to explain it.
With so many elders getting older, Miller says it's more important than ever to learn as much as they can before the elders are gone. He calls himself an elder in training.
Now more and more of them are leaving. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's like an encyclopedia is getting burned right in front of us and it's the last copy.
Miller continues to learn and teach as much as he can so that the Tlingit culture will continue to grow stronger and carry on long after he's gone. For AK, I'm Ann Bryce.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to an unofficial community near Denali National Park called The Stampede.
My name is Molly McKinley, and I live on the Stampede Road outside of Healy, Alaska, and I am the outdoor recreation planner for Denali Park. The view here is big sky country with a ring of mountains all around and tundra to the west and taiga and forest to the east as you drop towards the Nenana River Valley. For fun, there's a lot of dog mushers out here. It's really easy access to many, many trails that people spend their Saturdays chopping wood and splitting wood, and there's a lot of neighborliness as well, a lot of gatherings with folks, especially during the winter months. You find folks hanging out in their long johns and drinking hot chocolate and, ATV and four-wheeler running around and snow machines in the winter and just anything you can do to be outside. The challenges are just that the weather can be brutal. It can be extremely windy here. We had 60-mile-an-hour gusts the other night, which makes the house rock and roll, and you might lose parts of your garden. In the winter, that means big drifts, and some years our driveway is totally filled in with snow for 1 year, was up to 7 months. So there are challenges like that for myself and certainly for others who live even more remote from the local road system here. So sometimes it's just access getting in and out, and sometimes it's weather, and then there are other realities of just living far away from services. So none of it's a big, big deal, but it just adds hours and challenges here and there. My favorite parts about living on the Stampede are that it's this wide open space, and I can walk out my door, and I can put on my skis, and I can ski for days, and there's a lot of freedom in that. And the other great part about life here is that on a given Saturday, my day might include coffee with Scrabble, and then maybe I'll borrow one of the neighbor's dogs out of her dog yard, and then I'll go ski drawing, and then I'll be out on the trail. Maybe I'm out for 2 hours, and I'll probably pass one or two friends who are mushing their dogs, and then maybe I'll get home and someone will have left a gift of blueberry jam on the table that they just canned earlier that day, and maybe that evening would involve sitting around and thinking about what we're going to build next spring. And that's what makes the Stampede great, is that we're friends on so many different levels and that we interact both within and outside of our homes. And it's really fun.
Molly McKinley lives in the Stampede. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK This Week. We had help from Ashley Snyder, Anne Bryce, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Annie Feit.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Tuluksac, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Shady Grove Oliver in Soldotna, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Anchorage and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust.
And by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
Didn't quite catch that report. Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at alaskapublic.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.